You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's still unknown whether or not BP's efforts to top kill the Deepwater Horizon oil spill have been successful. But as the spill drags into its second month, a number of reports have come out detailing longstanding governmental problems, like lax regulations and cozy relationships between regulators, other officials, and the oil industry that might have contributed to the spill. The first is an Inspector General's investigation into the Minerals Management Service. The second, a report that appeared this week in the LA Times. We're joined now by Marion Wang, a blogger reporter for ProPublica.org, and by Kim Geiger, a staff writer in Washington, D.C. for the LA Times and Tribune Company. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
And we are currently streaming President Obama's press conference on the oil spill in the Gulf on WNYC.org. We'll have a roundup on what the president said later in this hour. Marion, the Minerals Management Service is the agency that regulates offshore oil drilling in places like the Gulf of Mexico, and it's being reported that Elizabeth Birnbaum, the head of the MMS, resigned this morning. Do we know if her resignation was a result of a mounting political pressure on the administration, or was it in connection to something in particular?
We actually don't know much yet about that. The New York Times did a very interesting profile of her the other day that called her the oil spill's invisible woman. So not much has been reported on her, and that just came over, you know, our radar this morning as well. But certainly there has been a lot of criticism levied at MMS, and I'm sure that's part of it.
And how long has she been at MMS?
She's only been head of MMS since July 2009, and that's shorter than Ken Salazar has been in his position. So,
In testimony before Congress yesterday, Ken Salazar said that he has ordered an investigation into what the MMS did or did not do that might have contributed to the spill. Has any evidence surfaced so far?
I haven't seen much. I know they have actually been announcing a series of reforms, including splitting up the agency, and that's supposed, you know, just to mitigate some of the conflicts of interest that have been talked about there.
Splitting up the regulatory and the royalty aspects,
right,
of it.
Initially they announced a two-way split. Now it seems, I've heard that it's going to be a three-way split, actually splitting up royalties, leasing, and inspections or safety.
Kim, hadn't the agency been criticized long before this recent spill for its close ties to the oil industry, even by President Obama himself?
Yep, the industry has had issues, particularly when it comes to royalty programs. In back in the 90s, when they were writing leases for offshore oil exploration in the Gulf of Mexico, the industry made some drafting errors that proved to be pretty costly. And there was some speculation that maybe those errors weren't exactly errors, but that was never really proven. And it looks like really the industry has just been very cozy with MMS and the Interior Department for many, many years.
In his press conference, the president just said that the MMS and the oil industry have a scandalously close relationship. Well,
right.
Of course, this is his MMS, isn't it?
It is, but the scandal goes back, you know, many years. There were some issues with sex and drugs and gambling.
And pornography.
Years ago, exactly. So it's a common trend that's been going on between MMS and the industry.
The administration has been criticized for its appointment of Sylvia Baca, a former BP executive, to the post of Deputy Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management. The Department of the Interior maintains that Ms. Baca is not connected to offshore drilling at the MMS and is recused from oil matters involving BP. But doesn't this still raise some questions about the so-called revolving door between industry and regulators?
Yes, it certainly does. This has been something that people have been kind of complaining about for a while, not just in MMS, but also, you know, in MSHA, the regulatory body for mining. It's definitely something that just needs to be looked at.
Marion, the Office of the Inspector General released a report this week which details a number of ethics violations that occurred at the Minerals Management Service from 2000 to 2008. What kind of malfeasance are detailed in the report? Is it the sort of thing that Kim was just telling us about, the drug use, emailing pornography and things of that sort?
Yeah, I mean, it's that. It's also falsifying inspection reports. It's a pretty good report, actually. They talk a lot about accepting gifts from the industry, you know, gifts or tickets to sporting events, that type of thing. There's actually even some emails noted in that report between a ConocoPhillips employee and one of the Gulf Coast, you know, MMS inspectors that said, you know, I accept certain, you know, gifts from certain good friends in the industry when he was asked if he takes bribes.
So he didn't use the word bribe.
He accepts gifts, some gifts.
There also have been reports that inspectors just would hand the inspection sheets to people on the oil rigs, have them write in the answers in pencil, and then they would go over it in ink
and sign their names.
That
was also part of it, yes.
Wow. I mean, this sounds pretty corrupt.
I mean, it's in general. I mean, beyond that particular instance of, you know, writing in pencil, it's MMS in general. When they're inspecting something, there is actually no enforcement, and that is not my word. That is actually something that an MMS official said in a hearing a couple weeks ago. There's no enforcement. They make recommendations as to, oh, you know, I think you guys should, you know, beef up your safety equipment here. But there's no enforcement of that.
Well, the violations all occurred at least 2 years ago. I don't know whether they have continued into the Obama administration, but is there any way that it can be connected to the Gulf oil spill? For example, you know, to a work environment that appears to have been rather lax.
Well, I think it can speak to the culture of an agency, and that takes time to change. I think it could definitely be improved, and that's something they're looking at right now.
My guests are Marion Wang, a blogger reporter for ProPublica.org, and Kim Geiger, a staff writer for the LA Times and Tribune Company. We're talking about the governmental aspect of the oil spill. Kim, to what degree have government financial incentives helped spur oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico over the past few decades?
Well, you know, back in the 90s when these incentives were put into place, the industry had argued that it wasn't profitable for them to do offshore oil drilling exploration on their own, that they needed these incentives, and they were given, you know, waivers on royalty payments, a series of tax breaks. The government started selling leases at much lower rates, and to an extent, that has expanded offshore drilling and oil production in the Gulf. But one of the promises was that, you know, this is going to decrease our reliance on foreign oil, and that actually hasn't happened. And in the meantime, oil company profits have continued to rise.
Now, the incentives were said to be necessary because oil prices were low at that time?
Correct.
Is that why
Go
ahead.
Oil prices were low, around like $18 a barrel back then. And when Congress's intent had been to do this just when oil prices were low. But then, you know, there were a couple years when the Interior Department made this drafting error and didn't include like a price threshold in the leases. And those errors led to a dispute over whether or not royalty waivers should even be tied to oil prices at all. And last year, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the federal government cannot tie royalty relief to oil prices, even for the leases that had been written correctly. And so now basically all leases issued in that 1995 to 2000 time period, if they're producing oil today, they're doing so royalty-free.
We can only imagine how much money we've lost as a result. Hasn't a bill been introduced this week to roll back the waiver program and various other subsidies?
Well, yeah. Because of this court ruling, they can't really these leases are considered contracts. They're binding. They can't really do anything to eliminate the leases. So a handful of senators have introduced a bill that would basically charge an excise tax on the oil that's produced as a result of these leases. So while the companies don't pay royalties on the oil, they would pay an excise tax that would be equivalent to what they would be paying in royalties.
Is that likely to pass?
Well, in the House, a similar type of effort has been made to basically require that any company that wants new leases has to renegotiate its old leases. That's been passed on numerous occasions, and it's never been able to get out of the Senate. So this effort is originating in the Senate, but it's got, you know, three co-sponsors, and the Senate has in the past not really wanted to do a whole lot about this.
Now, according to the Wall Street Journal, the Minerals Management Service collects more money than any other federal agency except for the IRS. How can that be possible?
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of money that they're collecting in royalties. These leases, the royalty waivers that we looked at were for leases that were issued between 1995 and 2000. And if in any of those leases, in a 10-year period, no oil was found, the leases reverted back to the federal government, and then the government was able to sell those leases back to a different company. And then if that company finds oil there, they can, you know, extract the oil, but they do pay royalties. So there's still a lot of money coming from this program, but there's also a lot of money, about $53 billion that's been lost.
Marion,
will be lost.
Haven't there also been questions from places like the Government Accountability Office about how thorough the MMS has been when assessing the environmental impact of drilling?
Yeah, the GAO had done an investigation, I guess, into, you know, one office. It seemed that the Alaska office had kind of suppressed some scientific information from environmental assessors within that agency who were looking at how risky drilling was going to be.
The front page of the New York Times this morning has a report on how BP documents reveal that the company chose to use a cheaper and riskier casing method for the Deepwater Horizon well that may have contributed to the spill. Are there any regulations about safety procedures for this kind of deep water drilling?
There are. Certainly, they do a lot of inspections of equipment to make sure that it's, you know, up to standards. But they don't have a lot of regulation over human error, and that's a question that has been raised, whether there should be more regulation in that area. Because if you look at their inspection reports, a lot of them seem to be more about, you know, the level of cement here, that type of thing, very technical.
Although, in this case, it was whether you drilled two holes or one hole, and they chose the one hole because it was less expensive. And so we wind up in this situation where they're now claiming a battery went dead?
Well, in general, the MMS has shown itself to be very sensitive to the cost of more strict regulations on the industry. I mean, they have considered stronger regulations, and in the past, industry has said, well, it's going to be very expensive. And then they've backed off, actually, and said, all right, let's study it more.
Kim, how much of that is because the oil industry has a very strong lobbying arm in Washington?
Well, they do have a huge lobbying arm. I mean, they've spent in the past, since 1998, they've spent almost $1 billion lobbying in Washington. And they have, you know, almost 200 lobbyists on Capitol Hill on any given day. So no doubt that has something to do with it.
And do we have any idea of what they're lobbying for right now? I'm sure they've gotten kind of defensive at the moment. Unless you're Rush Limbaugh, you kind of think that the oil industry is culpable here. He's the only person I know who suggests that environmentalists actually cause this explosion as a way of making a point.
Right. Well, recently what they were lobbying for was to expand offshore drilling, which they were successful in getting, although that's been kind of halted after this disaster.
Well, the Associated Press is reporting that the spill itself was almost four times bigger than the previous estimate. Was that just BP thinking optimistically? Do you know, Marion?
I mean, BP has been very reluctant, or not even interested, really, in getting more accurate estimates. Scientists have basically stood ready to, you know, to use more advanced technology that they say will produce a more accurate estimate, and BP has actually been like, no, we're just focusing on stopping this thing. And they've really not not moved to get a better estimate.
Although they did a lot of good PR immediately. They said, we will foot the total bill and we'll do whatever we can. But it's taken an incredibly long time.
I mean, by law, they actually have to foot the cleanup bill. So that's not charity.
There have also been reports of oil cleanup workers getting sick.
That's right. Yeah, and actually the Deepwater Horizon response confirmed that yesterday, that, you know, seven fishermen had come down with nausea, dizziness, that type of thing. And we've heard other reports. The LA Times also had flagged that.
Kim, just one more thing before we go. How does the lobbying effort compare to other industries like the financial industry, for example?
The oil and gas industry ranks right up there with the financial industry. They're the sixth biggest spenders, and that's above them would be pharma, insurance companies, you know, a lot of other industries where there's been a lot of activity in their, you know, area in the past few years. But they're right up there.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Kim Geiger is a staff writer in Washington, D.C. for the L.A. Times and Tribune Company. And Marian Wang is a blog reporter for ProPublica.org. It's been a pleasure talking with you,
Thanks.
Even if
Thanks
the subject is really sad.